Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington, brought to you by EMP 1-8 Loss, the standard for weight loss in the D.C. area. It's EMP1-8Loss.com. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Johnny Cake Sawville and Jason Bishop. EB returns on Monday. Join us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. It's our pal John Feinstein, best-selling author, Washington Post columnist, brought to you by Golfdom, located in Tysons, Virginia, or at golfdomgolf.com. Visit today to experience the best in golf on and off the course. Golfdom, live the game. Good morning, John.
Good morning, all. How are you?
Hello, John. What is your favorite sports month of the year?
Favorite sports month of the year?
Because I know it's March, but right now you've got baseball, of course, starting.
Yeah, baseball starting. The Masters next week.
Masters. You're gonna have. You're gonna be on NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs starting.
And you'll be at the Masters.
There's a lot happening.
I will be at the Masters. Yeah. You know, it's a good question. I mean, certainly this time of year is a lot of fun with the basketball, and then going straight into the Masters. I've always enjoyed that. I like October, too, because you've got postseason baseball, you've got the NBA starting, you got hockey starting, and then right after that, college hoops starts, because it starts now, the second Friday in November. So I enjoy that period too.
John, I know something that you're very passionate about is Lefty Driesell getting voted into the Naismith Hall of Fame. He finally got the word this week. Long deserved. I mean, he has 786 wins at four different schools. He was an innovator when it came to college basketball, so good for Lefty. And I know it's something that you were really stumping for over the last few years, so it had to be, you know, good news for you and obviously for Lefty that he's getting nominated.
No, I'm thrilled, and they'll officially announce it at the Final Four this weekend. And it took a long time because there are so many misperceptions about Lefty. When I tweeted Wednesday evening that he had gotten in, and by the way, for those of you who read the ESPN website and the fact that they didn't acknowledge the story and that the Post broke the story yesterday, that's sort of typical ESPN. But when I tweeted about it on Wednesday, immediately I got a lot of people tweeting back at me saying, I thought you were against cheaters getting into the Hall of Fame. Well, Lefty was never investigated by the NCAA, much less put on probation. And there, you know, then other people were saying, well, didn't they get put on probation for Len Bias? No. Bob Wade got them put on probation 3 years later. And there are still people who think that Lefty somehow played a role in Len Bias dying. And I think that I know, because I've talked to guys who voted in the past, that there was that misperception even among Hall of Fame voters. And it was really unfair that he didn't get in long ago.
Why would anybody think that he played a role in Len Bias dying?
Because Jason, people, you know, urban myths grow.
Because they're stupid.
And I don't know why they grow, but they do, and you know they do. And you know, then there was a story that Lefty had sent somebody or told Oliver Purnell, one of his assistants at the time, to go clean up Bias's room. Total lie.
Right.
Total lie. So there were these misperceptions about Lefty, and like you said, JP, he won 786 games, for crying out loud. He was the sixth winningest coach in history when he retired. He's now 11th. And, you know, and then there were people who said, well, he never made the Final Four. Well, there were, a lot of it was bad luck. His best team in 74 lost that classic game in NC State in the ACC tournament. That was the last year only one team could go from a league. He had to coach against Dean his entire time at Carolina, plus those great Norm Sloan NC State teams, plus then Krzyzewski coming into the league. But he went to four Elite Eights, two at Davidson, which had never, you know, done anything in basketball before he got there. And by the way, of the 63 coaches in the Hall of Fame, college coaches, 23 of them never made the Final Four. So that shouldn't have kept him out, but I'm sure that people brought that up too. So it took much longer than it should have. And I openly campaigned for it for a long time, and it was kind of funny on Wednesday night after I broke the story. A number of people sent me notes congratulating me. Well, I didn't have anything to do with it. You know, if anything, my campaigning probably hurt him, because people at the Hall of Fame don't exactly love me because I call them out all the time. But I'm just glad it's finally going to happen and that he lived to see it because he's 86.
Mm-hmm. And John, a good nugget from your article about Lefty was after that loss to NC State, which had to be devastating because obviously Maryland can't go to the tournament at that point. Lefty made a point to go out to the team bus. He asked Norm Sloan if he could speak to the players and basically addressed them and said, hey, you guys have to go and win the national title now after you beat us. So, I mean, could you imagine a coach doing that in 2018?
Yeah, exactly. And Lefty was a unique character. That was part of why he was so special. He was so special to cover. You know, I covered him. It was my first assignment on the sports staff at the Post way, way back 100 years ago. And he would call me all the time. And he'd call me at 7 in the morning. And I was single at the time. So I wasn't up at 7 in the morning. And he'd call you, wait. He'd say, wake up, Feinstein. I got to get on you. And then he'd yell at me about something I'd written. And we'd argue about it. And he'd usually get mad and say, I ain't talking to you anymore. And he'd hang up. Then I'd go to practice that afternoon. I'd walk in. Because in those days, again, practice was open, at least to the media. And I'd walk in. And he'd walk over to me and go, what's up, Feinstein? You got a scoop? And I'd say, wait a minute, I thought we weren't speaking. And he says, oh, you know, I just got to keep you in line. Because he couldn't hold a grudge against anybody. And like I said, he's a really good guy. And I consider him a friend. And I'm really happy for him.
Did he dislike any coach that he coached in the ACC?
I don't think he did. I mean, Dean made him crazy. You know, Dean joked because Dean was so good. And because Dave Pritchett, one of his assistants, tells a story about walking in the locker room at halftime of a game in Chapel Hill back in Carmichael Auditorium, and he couldn't find Lefty. And he finally went in the bathroom, and Lefty was standing on a toilet, and he's holding his hand up against the ceiling panels. And Pritchett says, Coach, what are you doing? He says, I know Dean's got this place bugged. And he believes stuff like that, you know. And he thought that Dean had had every trick in the book because Dean had most of the tricks in the book. And there were times he got mad at Dean. In 1982, when Lefty didn't have a great team, they went to the NIT. When Carolina won their first national championship, Maryland went into North Carolina, and they were without their best player, Charles Pittman. And the fact that Charles Pittman was their best player tells you they weren't that good. And they almost beat Carolina. Carolina had Perkins, Jordan, and Worthy.
Right.
And would go on and win the national title, and I think the final was 55-54. And somebody asked Dean after the game, you know, how could Maryland play you so close? And Dean said, as he always said about his own team, about opponents, you can always play one great game without a key player. And somebody, you know, troublemakers like me went back and repeated that to Lefty, and Lefty went off. And he says, I come in here, I got nothing. I got no players. He's got Perkins, he's got Worthy, he's got Jordan, and I almost whip him, and that's what he says? That's a bunch of bull. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's quoted in the paper. Dean shows up at the ACC coaches meetings with clips from the papers the next day. And, oh, Lefty, I'm so disappointed you would say these things. So Lefty wrote him a letter and said, next year when we play, I don't care who wins, don't shake my hand. I'm not going to shake your hand. Just stay away from me. I don't care what happens. So, of course, the next year was the game. You guys probably don't remember it, but it's fairly famous. Again, Chapel Hill, close game, Maryland down one with the ball. And Lefty comes up with this brilliant idea to give the ball to his son, Chuck, who came off the bench. And Chucky was wide open for a layup. And Michael Jordan comes from the top of the key and blocks the shot. No mortal could have blocked that shot. Anybody else, it's a layup and Maryland wins. It was a brilliant move. He blocks the shot, ball goes out of bounds, buzzer sounds, lefty screaming for a foul. There was no foul. Lefty screaming there should be a second left on the clock. Wasn't going to happen. So here comes Dean with his hand out. Uh-huh. And Lefty looks at Lefty slaps it and says, "Get away from me, get away from me." And Bill Guthridge, who was Dean's number one assistant for 30 years, you know, loyal as the day is long, sees his boss get his hand slapped. And he puts his head down and starts to charge Lefty, literally. And Mel Cartwright, one of Lefty's assistants, is standing behind Lefty holding a chair. I mean, there could have been a riot. But Rick Brewer, who is the North Carolina SID, literally tackled Guthridge, like a foot short of Lefty. And who knows what would have happened if Bill had gotten to Lefty, but it was one of the wildest scenes you'll ever see.
So, John, yesterday I got a tweet about the way that we talk about the Capitals and Wizards and some of the local teams that have been making the playoffs but have disappointed in the playoffs. And it got me thinking, should we be giving the Capitals more praise for consistently being a contending team versus criticizing them for never getting beyond that second round?
You know, I may have seen that tweet or a tweet similar to it.
Right.
And it's an interesting point because the fact is the Caps are one of the most solid organizations in hockey. I mean, even the Blackhawks missed the playoffs this year. And the fact is the Nationals are one of the most solid organizations in baseball.
Right.
And, you know, both teams have failed consistently in the playoffs, and that's what you focus on. There's a great story by Chuck Culpepper in today's Post about Tony Bennett and, you know, being voted AP Coach of the Year because it's a regular season award. I'm one of the voters, and you vote at, you know, on Selection Sunday. And Tony, you know, acknowledging the irony of having such a great season, but all people are going to focus on is the loss to UMBC. That's the way sports is today.
Yep.
That's just the way it is. You know, I had a lot of my friends who are Duke grads calling me this week saying, you know, they didn't make the Final Four. And I read stories that said they failed to make the Final Four for the third consecutive seasons. Hmm. Well, they've been in the NCAA tournament 34 years out of 35. That's an unbelievable run. But because they've been good, their fans, like Caps fans, like Nats fans, are disappointed when they don't go deep into postseason, deep being, in their case, the Final Four. And the fact is, both the Caps and Nationals have lost series they should have won. And with the Caps, it dates to that 2010 series with Montreal when they were 1-seed, 8-seed. They had a 3-1 lead, and then Halak went crazy, and they ended up losing in 7. I thought they were going to win Game 7 against Pittsburgh last year after they won Game 6 in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
So it's very legitimate, I think, to point out disappointments, to point out failures, because they are failures. But at the same time, it's also fair to acknowledge that the bar is set high because of the fact that these teams have been so consistently good in the regular season.
Hey, I just wanted to ask you quick. Now, this is not about Tiger Woods on the course. This is about a book that you know that Armin Katayan and Jeff Bennett wrote called Tiger Woods, which I believe is coming out next week.
No, I think it's out.
Oh, is it
out? I actually think it's out.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but either way, yes, I'm told. I haven't read it yet, but I'm told I'm quoted extensively.
Okay. So, and of course, it's a very long book. I think it's over 500 pages. And you know Katayan very well. He's a great writer.
Worked with him.
Friend of yours. And he's getting criticized along with the co-writer by Steinberg and Greenspan, who are Tiger's reps.
Right, of course.
Yeah, and they're saying that they didn't do their fact-checking, that you know, there's egregious errors and all this stuff. And, of course, Katayan and Benedict are saying, hey, we interviewed 250 people. We stand by
right.
I read some excerpts on it, and there's some really interesting stories. And a lot of it's probably stuff that's rehashed that we've heard before. But as a author, I mean, I don't really hear about this too much. When an author gets attacked like that, like Katayan and Benedict, how do you handle that? Because I'm sure that these 250 people told them stories, and they said, okay, well, we're going to put it in the book. And, of course, Tiger says, no, it's not true.
Well, here's the response. I mean, as I said, I haven't read it yet. I've got it. I haven't read it. Number one, when they went to Steinberg because they wanted to interview Tiger for the book, the ground rules Steinberg set, and I don't know exactly what they were, but apparently they were so impossible. They said, no, we can't interview him. I mean, I think it was like no questions about the breakup of his marriage. Well, how can you not do that?
Right.
I mean, that's obviously a part of the book. And Tiger had the opportunity.
They asked for the questions up front. They wanted to know what the
and they wanted the questions up front, exactly, yeah. Which I get a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, and when I get that, whether regardless of the circumstance, my answer is I don't, and I'm being honest. I don't know what my second question is until I get the answer to the first.
Correct.
Good response.
Because the answer to the first question will lead me to the second question and so on. So I've never, ever submitted questions in advance. I've been asked too frequently. And I just say, no.
Yeah.
And they said no. And they were right to say no. And so Tiger was given an opportunity to respond. You know, freewheeling, answer anything he wants to. Don't answer what he doesn't want to. You know, see, that's the thing I always say to people. You know, you're setting all these ground rules. Here's a simple ground rule. If you don't want to answer a question, you don't have to. It's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, Steinberg and Greenspan are claiming all these things are inaccurate. And, okay, show specifics. Show some. You can't just say that there are facts that are wrong. Show specifics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I doubt if they'll be able to because these are two very good reporters.
Excellent.
And as you said, Jason, they interviewed over 200 people. And from what I hear, there's not a smoking gun in the book because the smoking gun was 10 years ago after the accident. That gun already went off. But as you said, I think there are a lot of details that are probably embarrassing to Tiger, and many of them are apparently about his father and his father's behavior, which doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of family stuff, and Tiger didn't talk, and the father's dead, and the mom didn't talk. So I guess
right.
Tiger's camp's going, well, you didn't talk to anybody in the family. How'd you know all this stuff? But they've got sources.
Well, trust me, you guys know this. You're not members of my family, but you could tell people a lot of stuff about me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because over the years, Tiger spoke to people, his father spoke to people, his mother spoke to people, and those people are talking.
Right, and Tom Callahan, who wrote a book about Earl, was very close to Earl, and they had that book as a research tool. Plus, I'm certain they talked to Callahan.
Yep.
Just as one example.
Yeah, it's gonna be.
I mean, he hung out with Earl. Earl talked to him very openly about the fact that he fooled around all the time. And if you read that book, you know that's where there's more smoking gun stuff, I think, on Earl than there probably is in this book.
Man,
again, I haven't read this.
Earl
book
Earl was not a good dad, man.
Earl was not a good guy.
Yeah.
Period. You know, and the Tigeristas always criticize me and say you hate Tiger. I don't hate Tiger. I don't even dislike him. I feel sorry for him.
Yeah. You've said that many
more
times.
Than anything because I think his father ruined his life. And it doesn't matter that he's won 14 majors. He's got more money than God, and he's not a happy person. That's his father's fault.
When do you start?
I blame his father.
When
for
do
that.
You start doing the live froms next week?
I won't be doing live froms next week.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
No, I don't work for Golf Channel anymore.
Oh, should I have known that?
Well, probably. It happened like 6 months ago.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to
be. Yeah, me too. The money was good.
Way to throw salt in the wound, Jason.
Oh, but you will be at the Masters. All right, we'll talk to you next
week. I will
week.
Be at the Masters, yes.
All right, we'll see you.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, we're going to talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you
soon. Yes, you will talk to me next week, and I will be at Augusta.
All right, good.
Best-selling author,
Washington
Post columnist John Feinstein.
I had no idea that he wasn't working.
No,
did
now,
you know that?
Now we know. You guys know are the golf
I swear I thought
viewers.
I saw him on there probably a couple weeks ago. Right?
Maybe he was just a guest. Not a
I
paid
didn't know that. I thought he was still doing the live stuff. All right.
Maybe he was.
My bad.
Just a guest, not a paid contributor.
He's salty. His revenue stream dried up, but he'll find another one. Trust
he has
me.
Plenty. Yep. All right, coming up next, speaking of revenue streams, not always the revenue stream when you throw cash, but sometimes it can be.
It's true.
Sometimes need help from an expert. Handicapper Brandon Lang is going to join us as we talk Final Four here in the Junkies.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
boy too. What? To live in LA, West Side, West Side, West Side. To live and die in LA, where everybody try to fatten their pocket. So many hustle for the.
Remember, you can join the Junks tomorrow as we host our semifinals viewing party at MGM National Harbor at Tap Sports Bar starting at 5 p.m. See every game of the College Hoops Tournament for every seat at Tap Sports Bar. Details at thefandc.com/event. Your most important detail will be there starting at 5 p.m. tomorrow, so we hope to see you there as well. Speaking of those College Hoops games, our next guest has some insight, maybe some ways you can profit off of said games. It's our friend Brandon Lang.
Brandon,
what's up, B Lang?
What's going on, bud?
What's up, boys? What's up,
hey, man? Brandon, you know, we were mentioning, you know, we have an appearance at MGM National Harbor tomorrow at a casino. Beyond sports gambling, what's the most money Brandon Lang has won at the casino?
Ooh, good question.
And in what game? Like blackjack, craps, whatever?
Wow, that's pretty good. Craps. We had a group of us back in the day, Denny Mason, God rest his soul. It was Matt Offick, who played point guard for Arizona,
yeah.
And Lute Olson, Vegas kid. So they were filming. Fox had an old gambling show, and they were filming at the Golden Nugget downtown. So we were filming while we're on this roll. And Denny had a roll going. I mean, it was unbelievable. He was hammered, and he could not miss, and he was hitting every number.
What property were you at?
Oh, we had probably on each number 5,000.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, what casino?
What casino?
Golden Nugget downtown.
Golden Nugget. Okay. Nugget.
But they were filming this. They were filming it, and he hit every number. We had every, you know. Again, if you understand craps, the come out roll was a six. Next roll was an eight, so we put 5,000 on the eight. The next roll was a 9, 5,000 on the 9. We had every number covered.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm doing this interview, the stupid iRobot goes off to vacuum the floor. Nice job, Ken.
So funny.
So anyway.
I could hear it. That's so funny.
It's unbelievable. The thing's like a human. So we have every roll covered. We got 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10. He goes on a 10-minute roll and hit every number at five dimes a number. Then we threw out there, just Matt goes, Heart eight's coming. So we put a dime on heart eight. Denny throws a heart eight. It was filmed.
Right.
I think we totaled it up. It was over 100. It was 100.
It cost you a dime.
Wow.
That's impressive.
And just all of us, but it was filmed, and then they edited it, and they actually aired it. And the crazy thing about it was the day before my birthday, and I was with Ted Treba, who was in town for a golf outing. And we wake up the next day, go to my mom's house, and she cooks her homemade pancakes, which Ted still says this day are the greatest ever, with the sour cream and the waffles.
Your waffles are pretty damn good, I have to say that.
Thank you. And then we went out and played Shadow Creek in the afternoon. It was just for my birthday. So just an epic, epic, epic day.
B-Lang, am I missing out? Am I being a bit of a travel rube? Because whenever I go to Vegas, and it's not a lot, but I've never gone to Fremont Street. I've never gone to, like, the old Vegas. I'm there with all the sterilized casinos that all look the same, like Aria, Bellagio, and, like, you know, spots like that. Should I be hitting up the old spots in Vegas to get the
Yeah, you should go downtown. They've done an unbelievable job with just to go up there and see it, just to go up there and see Fremont Station and see, you know, just pop into the Glitter Gulch and pay $32 for two drinks. But there's some pretty good talent in the Glitter Gulch. But anyway, you should at least go up there once, because there's not a strip bar that I didn't pull a stripper out of in Vegas. Every one of the top six I pulled one out of. The Glitter Gulch, the blonde I pulled out of Glitter Gulch, though, she was epic.
When was that? What year was that?
Oh, this was, wow, let me think now. She even came and watched me play slow pitch softball, and the guys were like, oh, she was the number one girl in there, and I had a night where my lines were rolling, and she says, you're funny, let's go out.
Right.
I mean, it was,
I'm guessing you hammered it real good that night.
99.
Yeah.
But I use the same line. I use the same line all the time, which was with don't believe you, so then they test you, and then you do that.
You can't really say that, elected. By the way. Yeah. We have boundaries here.
You can't say that.
Plus my 11-year-old
I can't say that. I didn't say anything bad.
I know,
it's too descriptive.
It's just descriptive, Brandon. That's all.
By the way, B-Lang was doing that
bad.
In 1999. I was saving my bank receipts because I was scared of the Y2K. scared of the Y2K crash. And meanwhile, B-Lang's... two totally different lives.
We're not that far from you moving back out there, right? Is that going to happen in
June 12th, we'll be back out west.
Now, did you already buy your place out there? You already have your place?
I had a house there.
Oh, okay.
I always had my house there. What crushed me was when the Vegas housing market crashed, I had five other properties that wiped me out. Mm-hmm. I mean, big money I had invested, that's what wiped me out. That's what crushed me. But I had the one home that Kimmy and I lived in that when we moved to Jacksonville, my buddy just moved into it.
Okay.
Because he commutes from L.A. to Vegas, and he's in Vegas for like 3 days and L.A. for 4 days. And I'm like, so let's just pick up half the rent and stay in my house. So, and when I move back, you have to find a place.
You got a
he's
place.
Like, cool.
You got a place. All right, cool.
Yep.
All right,
so we're all good.
We got two games on Saturday. Let's start with the first one.
Well, first of all, let me just preface this breaking these down, that your boy here is on a tear.
Talk to me.
It's been pretty incredible. I'm 9-2 10-2 my last 12. Mm-hmm. I was
all college basketball?
All college basketball. It started a week ago Sunday when I had Clemson by 31 over Auburn. And then the Monday I had North Texas +2 at home, beats Mercer by 28. Mm-hmm. Tuesday was Penn State going to Marquette, winning outright. Wednesday was Illinois Chicago going to Austin Peay, winning outright. Thursday was Michigan blowing out Texas A&M.
Those are CBI and CIT games.
Yeah, he doesn't miss a beat.
Friday was Texas Tech beating Purdue. Saturday was Loyola Chicago beating K-State. I went into Sunday looking for an 8 straight college winner. And if Wendell Carter can make a 2-foot jump hook with 36 seconds to go up 5, which he almost airballed, by the way.
I think he did airball it. Maybe hit a little bit of that.
He just grazed the front rim. His mom says college is a con. Mrs. Carter, I got news for you. Two words for you. D-League. Your boy is soft. You should get another tattoo. He should have went to Harvard, and he'll be a bust in the NBA just like Okafor. Monday, lost. I dropped a game Monday, but came back Tuesday with Utah over Western Kentucky. Wednesday, Illinois-Chicago goes into Liberty +5, wins outright by 17. And then last night I thought was an absolute gift. Penn State, which was laying 4 to Utah.
Pummeled them.
If you read my analysis, it would have been a bigger play, but it didn't need to be just because they're not good. Regardless of the play, they're buying the streak. Penn State goes on the road and beats Notre Dame. They go on the road and beat Marquette. And they blow out a pretty good Mississippi State team. What Utah do? They beat Cal Davis at home, LSU at home, and an overrated St. Mary's. And then they beat a garbage Western Kentucky team. Penn State blew them out. So,
and they're the NIT champs. Congrats to
them. On a good roll. I like these games on Saturday.
All right, is there anything you can give us?
Loyola, Chicago, Michigan.
Yep.
I don't think the ride's over. If you look at Michigan and the way they play, it plays into the strength of what Loyola Chicago does. Now, it's hard to go against Michigan when you see what they did against Texas A&M, but Bruce Weber said it best after the K-State game. He says, I couldn't believe how good they were defensively and how we couldn't get into our offensive set. Now, the Texas A&M game withstanding, this is still a Michigan team that scored 61 against Montana, 64 against Houston, and 58 against Florida State. Take the name off the jersey. Take Loyola Chicago off their jersey and just let your eye test tell you what you see. Miami's not a garbage team. Tennessee sure as hell isn't a garbage team. And I assure you, Nevada, every guy in their lineup was 6'7", 6'6", 6'5", and athletic. So I think it's a favorable matchup. And if I were to tell you right now, what team is the number one point spread team in college basketball this year that made people the most money if you bet on them every game?
I'm guessing it's Loyola.
Loyola Chicago, 23-9 against the spread this year. And with Cluster in the lineup, who, by the way, got a full ride to Iowa State, didn't play much. Richardson, his high school teammate since the first grade, they were teammates since like second grade basketball. Richardson said, you need to come here. That's how he ended up at Loyola. They're 23-1 with him in the lineup since December 2nd.
What's
I'm sorry. I'm going to take the 5.5.
And then on the other side, you've got 2-1 seeds, and it's a 5 again. It's the magic number. Villanova laying 5. When's the last time a 1 played a 1 and was given 5? It just seems like a big number.
That's telling you right there what Vegas thinks of Kansas. Oklahoma State lost at home in the NIT to Western Kentucky. That's the same Oklahoma State team. I think I had 150 dimer on Oklahoma State plus 3 over Kansas earlier this year. Oklahoma State was up 14 in the first half and led by 10 the entire second half, blew them out by 18.
Yep.
Kansas is not very good. And like I said, Coach K is so overrated. He really is. You're going to go to Grayson Allen twice on 2 straight possessions and get 4 free throws to get the lead. And on the most important possession of your entire season, you're going to go away from Grayson Allen and go to Wendell Carter? It made no sense whatsoever. Or we're handicapping Villanova and Duke, and I'm telling you it's a 25-point blowout because Villanova would have ran Duke off the floor. I'm still telling you that as poorly as Villanova played against West Virginia, and I got tired watching that game, just it was exhausting, they still won by double digits. And then against Texas Tech 2 days later, they were tired. They had no legs. The West Virginia game wore them out, and they played probably the worst offensive game of the year. And you look up, and they win by double digits. 32 of Villanova's 34 wins this year have been by 8 points or more. And their 4 losses, only one was by more than 3 points. They're so much better than Kansas. Kansas is so overrated. They shouldn't be here. Blowout, double digits.
So if Villanova plays Loyola in the championship Monday, what's the number?
10.
Yeah.
And I would have to.
And you would lay.
I don't see.
You would lay.
I don't see how they. Yeah, I don't see how they match up. I mean, it's a. You listen, George Mason when they got there in 2006, they didn't match up with Florida. Wichita State when they got there in 2011, I forget who they lost to. It was a bad matchup. As good as Loyola Chicago matches up with
they
Michigan,
lost to Florida.
All right, Brandon, Florida. You got to run.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
BrandonLang.com. He's been on fire lately. Thanks for your picks, brother.
Got it, guys.
Yep. It's
Brandon Lang. Remember, Redskins beat reporter Craig Hoffman will join us at 9:20 to give us the latest. But next, we talk to our guy, Jags, Dave Jagler, the voice of the Washington Nationals. Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. Joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline to talk some Nationals, the voice of the Washington Nationals, along with Charlie Slows, it's our pal Dave Jagler. What's up, Jags?
Hey, it's like it's December 26th. I'm a day late to the celebration here.
Yeah, I'm very
finally jealous. Getting opening day.
Very jealous of Jags. He had an extra night in Cincinnati.
Yeah, what'd you do
is
all
that
day?
The Queen City?
Hey.
It is. What do you do in the Queen City when you have a free evening?
Oh, boy. Honestly, guys, yesterday, so the buildings here in downtown where we stay are connected by a skywalk.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally, between going out for lunch and going out for dinner, and I went to the gym and had an extra long workout, I never once breathed outside oxygen yesterday. I didn't set foot outside. It was
wow.
So miserable here yesterday.
Yeah.
Normally on an off day in Cincinnati, I'd find a place to play golf, but today was supposed to be our off day, and I was supposed to play golf, but
mm-hmm.
today is baseball, and yesterday the weather wasn't good, so I was basically bored to tears.
What are the first pitch temps supposed to be like today? About 40 degrees?
Well, yeah, mid-40s. Mid-40s looking outside the hotel window. I still haven't breathed any outside oxygen in this city yet.
I don't think it's a bad thing, Jags. We've done that many a time, especially, you know, we would do our annual poker tournament. Now it's at MGM National Harbor, but in the past it would be at the Borgata. And there are many guys who didn't leave that place for 3 days without stepping outside.
I raised my hand. I was one of those guys. Trust me.
It's raining a little bit, but hopefully it's going to clear up. I mean, they made the decision. It was a smart decision to postpone yesterday. It was miserable here all day, so hopefully
yeah.
We'll get this one in today at 4 o'clock.
Well, we kind of threw out the question earlier in the show, and we took some calls on it. And we asked, how did the Nats get over the hump? Meaning, of course, how do they – actually win a first-round playoff series? You know, is it Davey Martinez? Is it, you know, Adam Eaton being healthy? Is it other guys being healthy? You know, and it's kind of a tough question to answer for me anyway. I just answered and said, look, they can't make the mistakes that they've made in the postseason in the past, whether it be Weeders mm-hmm. throwing the ball away or Jason Worth's base running blunders, stuff like that. So I don't even know what the answer is. I guess the simple answer is he's got to play better. But to Dave Jagler, what is it? What is the answer to that?
Well, that's a fair assessment there. I mean, the crazy flukish thing about how they've lost all these playoff series and games in particular is over their postseason history, since they won their first playoff game against the Cardinals in Game 1 in 2012, they're 0-8 in one-run games in the postseason. Ooh. I mean, if you play 8 one-run games, you figure, hey, if you're really struggling, you're going to win 2 of them. You're going to go 2-6, but they are 0-8 in one-run games, and that speaks to the little mistakes that they made, whether it's last year, Lobatone getting picked off first base
right.
in the eighth inning with the tying and the go-ahead runs on. I mean, you can point to all sorts of little things in all these one-run games. I mean, was it Matt Williams taking Jordan Zimmermann out in the game that they lost in 18 innings? But, frankly, this team has always been a very good offensive team in the regular season. You get into the postseason, runs are tough to come by. These games that they're losing outside of the 9-8 game that they lost last year, these games are 2-1, they're 3-2, they're 4-3. They haven't scored a lot of runs. They haven't been able to situationally hit, get those runs in when they have a chance. So I'd love to see them in a postseason series, hit a little better, put some more runs on the board. But it's so fluky that they've lost all these one-run games in a row in postseason. But that's a long way. We've got a full 6 months ahead of us,
right.
and they certainly have to get there first.
What should Nationals fans expect from Adam Eaton?
Well, I mean, I think what you saw in April, I mean, he was a positive influence as far as setting the table with he and Trey Turner causing havoc. And this offense clicked when he was in there last year. I mean, it seemed like they were scoring 10 runs a game almost every other day. I think they averaged over 7 runs a game when he was in the lineup. Tough to sustain that over a full season, but he's a spark plug player. He's going to run into walls. He's going to run into ball kids making catches like he did in Florida. He's going to play the game, like Mike Rizzo says, with his hair on fire. So he became a very popular player here in his 1 month that he played last season. So I'm looking forward to seeing him for a full year.
What are your question marks going into opening day for this team?
Well, question
can't
marks, always
can't
be
many.
Well, I mean, I think like a lot of people, how are you going to fill in that fifth starter spot? I mean, how long does A.J. Cole hold on to that? Is he just keeping the seat warm for Jeremy Hellickson? I mean, obviously, the big question surrounding this team that people keep talking about is Zimmermann. How is this spring training going to impact the start of the season? Now, I'll tell you that Zimmermann is 100% healthy. I mean, I think there are people who think that the fact that he only played in one spring training game, the Nationals are hiding something or they're doing something nefarious with his health. He is fine. This is a plan that they came up with to get him ready for the season. It is very unorthodox. He got his work in on the minor league side. He got his at-bats. It's all about saving the wear and tear on his body. At his age, he didn't want to go through the rigors of even 15 or an extra 15 spring training games. So, how does this play out? Is he ready for the season to go? Is he going to come out gangbusters like he did last year? And if he does, is this a trend that catches around the league? I think a lot of people are watching this closely. If he gets off to a slow start, then it's going to be easy to second-guess that decision to say, he wasn't ready for the season. So that's going to be one that bears a lot of watching. But, I mean, I think it was done with the positive intention of making sure he's healthy for the entire season.
Did any other player on any other team that was healthy do the same thing that Zimmermann did?
No, not that I'm aware of, and I've never heard of anyone
right.
doing it. I mean, you talk to guys who are around the game on other teams, and they haven't heard of it. Obviously, your point about health, I mean, even the Nationals had Eaton and Michael Taylor throughout earlier in the spring playing in minor league games
sure.
when they were coming back from injuries.
Yeah, I can understand that.
That is a normal progression of events because it's a controlled environment. You can bat, for example, when Zimmermann was doing it, Zimmermann could bat every inning. So he could get, they play 7 innings, he could get 7 at-bats. If they play 9 innings, he could get 9 at-bats. And after he has his at-bat, they can choose to pinch run for him. He doesn't have to take leads, run the bases. defensively in a nine-inning game. Maybe he plays first base three innings. So you can monitor the workload, which in a regular big league spring training game, you've got to play the game like a regular baseball game. So it's going to be interesting to see if Zimmerman does have the start that he did last year, if more people look to do this in the future.
Joined by Dave Jagler, play-by-play voice, along with Charlie Slows for the Washington Nationals, who you'll hear right here on 106.7 The Fan later this afternoon as they open their season against the Reds in Cincinnati. This is going to be the first time since 2011 that a Nats team doesn't feature Jason Worth. How does that alter the clubhouse, and who fills that leadership void with Worth gone?
Well, it's definitely different. I mean, he was such a presence both on the field and in the lineup and in the clubhouse. Davey Martinez has really highlighted several people, and it depends on what part of the team. From the bullpen, having Brandon Kinsler back, Kinsler is kind of the ringleader in the bullpen, and in some ways acts as kind of a de facto pitching coach. He's helping Tanner Roark with his delivery and a few other pitchers. Obviously, Scherzer is the ringleader on the starting rotation, and as far as the starting lineup, I mean, I think a guy like Adam Eaton is going to step forward, and certainly we'll see if Harper steps up into more of a leadership role. He was obviously deferential to Worth, who was a mentor for him, so that opportunity is there for Harper. Now that he's entering basically his seventh big league season, he's got the cachet to take over that leadership role. So it's spread around. I mean, there's good veteran presence in this clubhouse, whether it's a Howie Kendrick, who's new to the team but a veteran ball player. You know, Zim's obviously, he's going to be 13th consecutive opening day start, but not the vocal leader that Worth was. So that'll be fluid, and I think over the course of the season, certain guys will step forward into that role.
Anything jump out at you yesterday with opening day? Did you watch much?
I was stuck in my hotel room. I watched wall to wall. I thought it was a great opening day, guys. Yeah. I mean, from the first pitch of the season, being hit for a home run by Ian Happ of the Cubs, you had a great comeback by the Braves. The Phillies took their starting pitcher out at 65 pitches because it was the third time through in the lineup, and he's a new manager, Gabe Kapler. He's getting killed in the media there because their pitcher was dominating. But, hey, the numbers say third time through the order, you take your starting pitcher out, even though he was just dominant. And then the bullpen gave up 8 runs over the last two innings. So there was a lot going on. Houston hitting a leadoff home run, the defending world champion. Springer did it for the second year in a row. The Dodgers losing 1-0 as Kershaw got out-dueled by Ty Block, who was filling in for an injured Madison Bumgarner. I mean, I live this. I mean, I'm a baseball geek, a baseball nerd, so I loved watching the games. And I was just sad the Nationals weren't a part of it, because I would have loved to have added, you know, a Scherzer 12-strikeout game to that list of great things that happened on opening day. And that's not even talking about how Stanton debuted in New York. What a performance that was, to hit a home run in his first Yankees at bat. That was a great moment for him.
What do you think of we actually played the clip earlier that social media kind of had fun with John Sterling's call, where I guess he does John Sterling has those unique home run calls, tries to rhyme a lot of things, or you know, it's A-bomb for A-Rod, and I guess he went Italian on Giancarlo Stanton.
Did you hear about
that? Yeah, there seemed to be a whole lot of hype about that coming up, as to, you know, he's going to hold it. And, it is what it is. That's that's his shtick. It's what he's known for. I'll just kind of leave it at that. I tend, my style is to kind of just call the home run as I see it, and whatever comes to mind comes out of mouth. Certain guys like it. I mean, you know, Charlie's got his signature calls, which has obviously become very popular, from Bang Zoom to Curly W, which are great calls. I just say whatever comes to mind. So, testing stuff out, writing stuff down, and coming up with pre-planned calls, not necessarily how I would choose to do it.
Gotcha, Dave.
All right, Dave.
All right, Dave, go breathe some fresh air at some point today, man. Get out of that stuffy hotel room, too.
I need it. Let's play some baseball.
All right, man. All right, appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
Have fun today.
And, of course, you can listen to Jags and Charlie Slows with the call later this afternoon right here on 106.7 The Fan.
That's right. Still got a lot to come up on the show. Craig Hoffman, a Redskins beat reporter, is going to join us at 9:20. And Marlins man, for his second appearance, he's going to join us at 9:45. He's a free agent. We can maybe recruit Marlins man to be Nats man.
Nats man. Why not?
We'll talk
to him. Get
him
in the mix.
Coming up at 9:45.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.